The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The first show of the week comes at you fast here at Edmund, 7 a.m., and we're off and running on another week of broadcasting here at KPCG and kpcg.fm for the live stream. You can get the stream, of course, on YouTube. You can get the podcast later. So many of you know this already, but our audience is growing. It's been a busy weekend here at the headquarters campus of the Philadelphia Church of God. There's been quite a lot of practicing going on for the upcoming, dance performance, Celtic Throne. That's less than 2 weeks away now. The first production or the first performance is June 28th, and that will be, two Sundays from yesterday. So we've sold half of the seats for that performance. That's all that we've opened up so far. We might be able to unblock some of the others. We'll see how the state of Oklahoma goes with the social distancing here in the next couple of weeks. But for the seats that are available for that first show, already sold out. And I saw the rehearsal on Friday morning, I think it was. And then we watched some of the video of that last evening. All the dancers are in town now and working hard. I know these last couple of weeks are going to be especially intense. So a lot to look forward to if you enjoy some of the musical productions that this church regularly produces. A few comments here. Brilliant program. Says it how it is. And another one on Friday wrote, good morning from Toronto. This is such an evil wave of destruction for people everywhere that will only lead to more divisions and breakdowns of mankind's ways, which is run by the spirit of the devil. Yes, indeed, that's something we've pointed out over and again. There is a real spirit world. Satan the devil's been cast down. Revelation 12 says he's confined to this earth. And look at what's happening on earth today. Another listener says, re-education is needed for a change to happen and a total change of attitude. That's the solution. Re-education and a change of heart, a change in attitude for sure. Another one writes, bonjour, nice to see you back in Oklahoma. Thank you for this important information. And then a longer one comes in from Oklahoma. It says here, thanks for an excellent week of TDRs. The past few weeks have once again been such a real reminder of Satan and his demons cast down and how destructive and dangerous his mindset is. It says, although I must admit I don't fully understand the emotions and fragility of race relations in America, it's always extremely disheartening to see Satan attacking race, something that God sees as beautiful and which he himself created. What must God think? He's created all of these races, and we see so much racial division and hatred and strife. We're seeing it over and over and over again. He's there, Satan and his demons, they're there to exploit these racial tensions, this racial strife. My father, by the way, his recent program, I should have asked Dwight on the way in, but I don't think we've had any cancellations on the riots prophesied, the Key of David from this past weekend. A strong program where my father went through Isaiah 1 and verse 7, talking about our cities being burned with fire. It prophesies of strangers rising up. The tail, as Deuteronomy says, becoming the head. And then, as my father brought out in the program, both sides in this war, in this race war, both sides are going to lose. Ezekiel 33 and verse 11, it says, as I live, says the eternal God, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live, turn you. Turn you from your evil ways, for why will you die, O house of Israel, why will you die? This is about nations dying. This is not about one ethnic group over another and one coming out on top or one winning. It's about the entire nation dying because of lawlessness, because of sin. These are the root causes. I played some clips on Friday from this police chief in Seattle. She's the one who pulled the troops out, remember, so that these thugs could get in there and control part of the city. Six city blocks in downtown Seattle. And listen to this Seattle police chief talking about how that because of all that's been happening, policing, not just in Seattle, policing in the United States will never be the same. This is clip one.
But what I believe, especially after I was at a march yesterday or the day before yesterday with Black Lives Matter, and I was looking at the 60,000 people that were there, signs saying, you know, defund the police, stop police brutality, you know, no qualified immunity. And there were thousands of people carrying those particular signs. And I just realized it was a moment, an epiphany that this is a pivotal moment in history. We are going to move in a different direction, and policing will never be the same as it was before.
Pivotal moment. She's right. Policing is never going to be the same. Here there was another incident between white officers and a black man in Atlanta. I think it was Saturday night. It led to that eating establishment being burned to the ground. And a thing that strikes you about this video of this confrontation, two officers arresting a black man because he was intoxicated and he was operating his vehicle. The thing that strikes you about this video, though, is just how respectful the black man was initially, and the two officers also couldn't be nicer and were very thorough, were asking him questions, making sure they had the evidence that they needed. They gave him the breathalyzer test. It went on for, I think, something like 30 or 40 minutes. The exchange between these two. I guess there was another officer standing there beside the one that was doing most of the talking. But then the black man, Rayshard Brooks, he was over and again saying, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir, no, sir. Then when they went to put handcuffs on him, it's like he snapped. Think of Revelation 12. Think about Satan exploiting these instances, exploiting these confrontations. What was or should have been just a routine arrest for drunk driving. All of a sudden, these three are on the ground. And this black suspect is punching the officers, grabbing the taser and so on. And it led to him being shot and killed as he was running away. And so here again, was it excessive force? I think the shooter, he's been fired. The other one suspended. And now the questions are there in front of us again. Do the police even have the authority now to subdue someone who's resisting arrest? Policing is just never going to be the same. It's not going to be like it was before. And of course, many are cheering this. I understand that. I know that. Many are cheering for this. But what we're seeing is a breakdown in law and order. That's really what that police chief is getting at. It's not going to be the same. But does that mean it's going to be better? Because the radical left is saying, yes, the solution is to just remove the police and everything will get better. She has this epiphany, she says. She's out there with Black Lives Matter, 60,000 of them. And she realizes, yes, we're going in a new direction. But what are the others thinking? Those that are frightened by this. Those that are looking at this saying, well, you can't just tackle a police officer if you don't want to be arrested and start punching him, start assaulting him. What are the police supposed to do? And what would any of us do in a moment such as that? We don't know. How could we know? He starts grabbing for the tasers, and who knows what else he's grabbing for. So he's shot dead, and now here it is, being exploited just like the previous one. And of course, this one's not near as clear-cut as the other one. The radical left probably won't get quite as much mileage out of this one, but they'll certainly use it. Anything and everything that they can do to inflame the racial hatred, the tensions, the division. Like I said, she mentioned the numbers for the BLM protesting. And then you can look at the numbers for Donald Trump and conservatives. He's got a rally in Oklahoma, actually, next week. Tulsa, just 90 minutes up the road from us. And according to his campaign manager, 800,000 people have sought tickets for this rally. He's going to be speaking at a basketball arena that only sits 19,000 people. But 800,000 want to get in. And you hear about all these polls that evidently Donald Trump is plummeting. He's losing his support for female voters and such. But just remember, when you see footage of the rally next week, just remember some of those images. Here again, we're hearing from the media today, and they're telling us that what's happening on the television screens, what we're seeing, they're saying it's not really happening. The president has quite a lot of support. Now, obviously, here in Oklahoma, this is a very, very red state. He couldn't be on friendlier turf than Oklahoma. And this is a state that's lifted so many of the restrictions from the lockdown. It's a very different state. Comparing it to Massachusetts or New York or California. But still, he's got solid support in the regions or the states that are more red. And then you've got the Black Lives Matter movement that has its solid support. It's leading to Ezekiel 4 and 5. You look at the Black Lives Matter movement today, and that's, we've talked in recent years about just how the Democrat Party has shifted so far to the left. And the Democrat Party is pretty much the Black Lives Matter movement now. I think the only thing that Joe Biden has distanced himself from is the phrase defund the police. But as for the rest, I mean, he's on board. He's on board with it. And look at what they're doing to the cities. Look at what they're out there promoting. And then the media giving them all that cover, saying that there really is nothing too serious here. It's mostly peaceful. Listen to, we talked Friday on the program about Chaz, that little state that's been formed by the thugs in the heart of Seattle. And here's how Brian Stelter at CNN yesterday, here's how he justifies that insurrection. Clip two.
But look, to be clear, this is a police-free zone, mostly police-free. Some police have come in. It amounts to about six blocks. Look at this map. Okay, it looks pretty big if you show the map, right, really zoomed in. But when you zoom way out, you see this is just a small part of Seattle. Now, here's what Fox News did on the web. We can go, let's zoom the map out. Let's just go ahead and show the zoomed-out map if we can. I just want to make the point, this is a small part of a big city, and that's not being reflected in the coverage.
Yeah, just zoom out. If you zoom out far enough, it's not really that big of a deal. I suppose you could take that reasoning all the way through to World War III. Cities being bombed by nuclear weapons. And if you zoom out far enough in the universe, you know, it's just a tiny little explosion, I suppose. How would they report on the Michigan protesters from a month ago? Had they, you know, they showed up, some of them, with guns. And the media, they were terrified. Following his logic, what if those protesters then would have taken over six city blocks in Lansing, Michigan? How do you suppose Brian Stelter would be approaching that story? And furthermore, this comes from the same media that zooms in on one incident and tells you that the entire system is flawed. The entire system is racist through and through. All of those police encounters, 700,000 police officers, millions and millions and millions of interactions that they have on a daily basis. This matter in Atlanta Saturday night was just for 45 minutes. It was just routine. And people want to say, well, he was just drunk. How does he get shot and killed for it? Here is a Wendy's, the restaurant. He's passed out in the drive-thru lane, and why did they call the police? If this was in Atlanta, chances are a lot of the employees in that Wendy's establishment might have been black. So why did they call the police if the police are the problem? They call the police. The police have 45 minutes of discussion with this man and determine that he was intoxicated. And then he snapped. And all of a sudden it turns into an explosive situation. Where is this leading? Look at this movement. We have this article. I mentioned it Friday. This is Surrendering to Lawlessness. And you just look through the beginning of this piece, and you'll see why the trumpet is so unique. Hopefully you're a subscriber. But this next trumpet, it's not quite out yet. But it says here, virtually overnight, George Floyd's untimely death made Black Lives Matter mainstream. You see, if you zoom way out, well, it's one untimely death. But look at what it's turned Black Lives Matter into. It's gone mainstream. This is no longer a radical fringe group. It says, so just what is this movement America is now treating so reverentially? You can't criticize it. You can't even criticize this movement. So what is it? What's its mission? Well, go to its website. That's what Nigel Farage did on Thursday, and then Friday, he's fired. It says here, Black Lives Matter does not advocate law enforcement reform. Its members want to defund and disband the police entirely. They aim to overturn a system they deem to be inherently racist. BLM has grown into a global activist complex that aims to eradicate white supremacy and to build local power to resist whites. It says prominent BLM activists regularly endorse or even encourage destruction of property, mayhem in American cities, and violence against police. And then it goes on and talks about what Black Lives Matter says at their own website, how that they're aiming to upend or destroy the traditional family. They want to build a community. Collectivism. It's a Marxist revolutionary movement. And this, as the article brings out, is the movement America is now treating so reverentially. This Marxist revolutionary movement. It's a communist insurgence. And it can't be criticized. You cannot criticize it. It's just against, it's like the lockdown rules. You just have to go along. And a lot of people are doing it. Richard kind of went with a side-by-side comparison of the protests in London. More protests in London over this weekend. Last weekend, remember, this was when you had horses running through the streets and policemen getting knocked out and police forces on the run, running from the mob. And then the BBC reporting that 26 police officers had been injured. And then at the same time, in the same breath, saying, it's mostly peaceful. It's really going pretty good here. It's heartwarming, right? It's heartwarming. You saw the images. There were the media saying it was mostly peaceful. And then this weekend, you have concerned citizens, in some cases, British or World War II veterans, who were appalled by what was happening to the memorials. And they were turning out to protect the monuments. And how did the media cover this? Well, now it's dangerous. Now these are far-right activists. Now it's violence. It's a really violent protest. They said they didn't say that about anything last week with respect to the Black Lives Matter protesting. They went on and on with how peaceful it was. And the reality is, a lot of British citizens viewed what happened and saw that the police didn't protect the Churchill Monument and others. And so, like that clip I played for you on Friday, you had citizens turning out, just getting in front of those monuments, saying that, well, if the police aren't going to protect them, then we will. Listen to this World War II. I think he's a World War II veteran. He's a veteran. But he was in London over the weekend to, as he says, to protect the memorials. This is clip three.
Why are you here today?
To show respect to our memorials and protect them from thugs that have no respect for this country whatsoever.
So you're just here just to protect the war memorials?
Some memorials and protect our dignity and our respect. We're not here for trouble or to cause trouble. We're here on a peaceful demonstration to prove our loyalty to this country.
And what do you make of the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan?
Sadiq Khan should be arrested and shot as a terrorist, calling us thugs, and we've served our country all these years, and there are many people here that have served their country and many that are dead serving this country. That man is an out-and-out traitor.
He actually referred to everyone here today as far-right. Do you see yourself as far-right?
We are not far-right. We are veterans of the British Army. We serve our Queen and our country, and even though we're not in full service, we still do it today. And we only kneel to the fallen.
Some moving commentary there from a military veteran in Britain turning out to protect the war memorials. Now, that's who they were mostly. Of course, there were some far-right activists that turned out. Like I've said before, with respect to Michigan, they'll search every inch of the state to find one in the protest. That's far to the right. That actually is a racist. But just zoom out for a moment and look at the tone, look at the coverage. Even Boris Johnson, he wrote in The Telegraph, it's utterly absurd that a load of far-right thugs and Bover boys this weekend converged on London with a mission to protect the statue of Winston Churchill. It was right that a good number should have been arrested. They were violent. They were aggressive toward the police. They were patently racist. There's nothing that can excuse their behavior. And then he tweets this on Saturday. This is the Prime Minister. Racist thuggery has no place on our streets. Well, okay, then what about last weekend? Where was this tweet last weekend? We have no place for racist thuggery on our streets. And if you want to look at the numbers, this is what Brian Stelter's suggesting, I guess. If you want to look at the numbers, 6 injuries to police officers this weekend. Last weekend, 26, 27, I think it was. Now, last weekend, it was mostly peaceful. This weekend, it's racist thuggery. And all the, that's just Boris Johnson, the BBC, and everyone else. It was like on a continuous loop. Any scene of violence that they could find. You think they're really interested in promoting a strong and unified nation, either in Britain or in the United States? They want to destroy. They want to divide. They really and truly are, so many of them, enemies of the state. Where was this condemnation last week? It was gone. It was missing because we have capitulated to this Marxist insurrection. Black Lives Matter must be treated reverentially. That's the law of the land. You can't criticize it. Deuteronomy chapter 20. That's really what we're seeing here. My father's made the point. He's giving a series of lectures right now on all of the lawlessness that was happening in the transition from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. And he's made the point recently about our nation as a whole and just how faint-hearted we are. He makes this point in Great Again as well. but just how faint-hearted we are. The sickness, Isaiah 1. Sick from head to toe. Deuteronomy 20 here, in verse 1. This is instruction for warfare. It says, when you go out to battle against your enemies and see horses and chariots and a people more than you, be not afraid of them, for the Eternal your God is with you, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So when you go out and there's this formidable force there, you can't be afraid. You can't be faint-hearted. This is a military movement in so many ways. They're taking to the streets. They're using violence to get what they want. Seattle's a case in point. And here the lesson that we're to take away from all of this is that, well, policing's going to change forever. She's right about that. In fact, it's just going to get worse. It's going to be worse on the streets because there is no crackdown. We've surrendered to it. We've surrendered our cities to these forces. That's why this next trumpet is so important, because you're not going to get this message anywhere else. Verse 8, it says, and the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, what man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. If you're faint-hearted, if you're a coward, this is the instruction that Moses gave to the Israelites in Deuteronomy 20. If you're a coward and you're faint-hearted, you go to your house. We don't want that attitude to spread. Here it's individuals like that veteran, that military veteran. They're the ones being called racist and thugs. And those people fought for the British Empire. They're the villains. Donald Trump's like the last man standing here in the U.S. He's the villain. He's coming under attack. It's so easy, isn't it? It's so easy. So much self-loathing. So much faint-heartedness. So much weakness and cowardice. It's so easy as a white liberal, or in some cases as white conservatives, to just criticize the whites. To just condemn everything they do. Even if they're coming out to protect the monuments that you, your law enforcement officials, will not. They're the racists. They're the thugs. And meanwhile, BLM is treated reverentially. This is what we're seeing. How did it happen? How did it change in just a matter of weeks? Now, Colin Kaepernick's held up as the great philosopher of our time. Nothing controversial there. Nothing controversial with Black Lives Matter mission statement. Just accept it and go along. And if you're going to criticize any group, well, of course, criticize the whites. They're the ones who are inherently racist. Listen to this montage. Grabian put this together, I think, last week, clip 4.
Well, if you think you're not racist, you could be right. But in this day and age, that's simply not good enough.
What I did wrong in 2016 is I overestimated white people.
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right, up to the right.
Those white guys, those middle-aged, boring, nerdy-looking white guys.
And white people have been probably woefully late to this conversation.
But I'm not willing to let white voters off the hook.
Do you believe that white folks actually care about racial injustice?
It doesn't appear that we do. I mean, the status quo of our society is racism, and it's comfortable for white people.
Well, because we're white, we have had privilege, even the poorest of us.
I sit here as a privileged white woman. I cannot imagine, but I appreciate you educating us.
It's very hard to talk about the issue of race. White people particularly don't know how to do it.
Well, I call it white mansplaining.
This idea that white people are objective on racism, which is outrageous. We are the least objective.
The most dangerous kind of white privilege is to think that we can sit this justice struggle out.
It's critical for white people, for people in general, to stop denying their racist ideas.
That's why it's time to check our bias at the door and lean into the discomfort that is necessary for real change.
The heartbeat of racism itself is denial, and the sound of that heartbeat is, I'm not racist.
It is incumbent upon people who hold the power in this society to help to do that, to do the heavy lifting. And guess who that is? Who is that, Chris?
White people. I don't talk much, but when I do, I make it count.
It's 24/7. No wonder these young people are taking to the streets. And a lot of them are white. That's the thing. Black Lives Matter has a lot of support from young white liberals. And they're out there trashing the streets. They're out there taking over sections of cities. And these same commentators are saying, well, just zoom out. It's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal if a police precinct evacuates. This is normal, I guess. This is frightening. This is disgusting, what we're seeing. Justified. They're justifying it. They're excusing it. Or if they are saying it's a problem, they're saying it's the white man's fault. Weakness and cowardice on display every day. Faint-heartedness. God told the Israelites, if you're afflicted with faint-heartedness, stay inside, please, so it doesn't spread. It has spread, hasn't it? It's spread all across our society. So much weakness, so many people scared like never before. Injustices blown way out of proportion. A lot of them imagined or perceived. Let's zoom out then and look at context. Let's look at the law enforcement as a whole. No one wants to do it. Instead, we just capitulate. We just surrender. Listen to this LA Times executive editor. He's basically, I guess, running the paper. And listen to what he says and how he justifies violence and looting. Clip 5.
One of the active debates we had over the past week was about the use of the word looting to describe the destruction of property, and the very much the feeling among the black journalists at the Los Angeles Times, who frankly educated the rest of us to the fact that looting had a pejorative racist connotation, and that comparing it to the kind of behavior of the police and the kind of behavior that we witnessed really was a false equivalency, and yet it was one that we were making as journalists if you picked up a copy of our paper.
Here's the executive editor of the LA Times saying, we've been educated. We've been enlightened. We understand now that looting has a pejorative, racist connotation. It's racist to say they're looting. Well, what are we going to say? We're running out of words, I guess. Can we say violence? Can we say looting when we see violence and looting? So he's the executive editor. How does this influence the articles that they produce? Justifying lawlessness. Or as we say in the next trumpet, surrendering. That's what it is. Surrendering to lawlessness. This is Satan loves this. He loves this. He loves it when people with all of this self-hatred, this self-loathing, can look at violence and looting and burning on the TV screen and say, you know what, that's not really violence and looting and burning. It's more like that one, the author of the 1619 Project. It's just more symbolic. It's kind of a symbolic taking. It's not really stealing. It's not really looting. You think it's just one individual, the 1619 lady that's spouting off this nonsense? That's the executive editor. What you just heard there, it's from the executive editor of the Los Angeles Times. They've been educated to know now that looting is racist, to say looting, to use the terminology to describe what's happening. It's actually racist. When we come back, we'll delve into the subject of courage more deeply, because we as God's people are going to need to be courageous people to stand up for the truth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can submit feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Revelation 6 stands out as an important chapter because of how it locks in with another one of Jesus Christ's prophecies. The glorified Christ revealed these future events to John in Revelation 6, and it was Jesus Christ as a human being, God in the flesh, who prophesied these same events in Matthew 24, the same Christ. In the traditional Christian world, we hear a lot about Christ as our sacrifice, our Savior. But how about Jesus Christ the prophet? That's exactly what he was. His gospel and his whole message revolved around prophecy. So to know Christ means to know about the prophecies he spoke in Revelation and in Matthew. This free booklet, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, shows that what Christ prophesied in Matthew 24 is primarily for the end time. For more than five decades, Herbert W. Armstrong declared a powerful and consistent warning about the dramatic fulfillment of end time prophecy. Using the Bible as his guide, Mr. Armstrong made bold predictions about the course of world events long before they occurred. He was right encapsulates what he boldly proclaimed for more than 50 years. This free booklet will build your faith in the certainty of biblical prophecy. Request He Was Right and The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Both booklets are offered free of charge at no cost or obligation to you. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Richard and Sam, our Edstone staff, or two of them there, They went Friday afternoon. They went to this Black Lives Matter protest in Stratford-upon-Avon. That's the city just down the road from Edstone, and this is in the heart of England. It's a more conservative area, so it wasn't this huge protest by any means. They estimated maybe 300-400 people who turned out for this. And going in, Richard was saying how he was he felt like he was going to be angered by what he saw and heard, and there's certainly from some of the leaders that spoke there was a lot of craziness on display. But Richard said he wasn't quite expecting to react the way that he did once he saw the protesting. He said he felt sorry for them. He said you just saw a lot of weakness and capitulation. You had some fiery rhetoric from the leaders, but just a lot of people kneeling and bowing down to this movement, treating it, as I said, so reverentially. And so many just, of course, being swept into it when they know really little or nothing about the organization that they're out there supporting. Breakdown in a lot of things: education, leadership. Matthew 9 in verse 36, it says, "But when he saw the multitudes," Jesus that is, "when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd." People faint. People weaken when they don't have strong leadership. When there isn't Churchillian leadership. Look at what happens to our people. Look at what happens to Israelites. Moses said in Deuteronomy 20, we read it in the first segment, if you're faint-hearted, stay inside. Don't you dare come out, because we need to be strong. We need to be courageous. And cowardice spreads like a cancer. It spreads like a virus. That's why we see, when we look out and about, we see so much faint-heartedness. It's because of this, lack of leadership, lack of education. Daniel 8:12 identifies it as the problem, that is, as sin. Transgressions have come to the full. And look at how sin weakens us. In that same book of Deuteronomy, by the way, I forget which chapter, Deuteronomy 8 or 9, it's Moses there saying that, look, if you want to be strong as a people, if you want to be strong individually, if you want to be strong as a nation, then you keep the commandments and you'll be the envy of the world. The world will look at you and say, that's what I want to be like. How are they getting all those blessings? How are they projecting so much strength? There's so much weakness on display because there's so much sin. There's so much lawlessness. And then you can't really do much of anything to criticize a movement, a Marxist insurrection, because we're so weak. The best that you can do is talk about the racist thugs and imply that it's that military veteran that just came out because he's angry that the police won't protect the monuments that honor the dead, that honor those who've been slain for their country, that honor those who fought for their flag, who've died for that flag. Weakness and faint-heartedness, sickness from head to toe. You look into the book of Joshua, he followed Moses. And God draws attention to his courage. God put Joshua in the position he was in as Moses' successor, largely because he was so courageous. And he just followed in the steps of Moses. He said, everything that Moses did, everything that Moses preached, everything that Moses taught, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to carry on with Moses' legacy. And what a fighter he was. Joshua 1 and verse 1, it says, now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord came, it came to pass, that the Eternal spoke unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, unto the land which I do give to you, even to the children of Israel. So this was a daunting task. They were going to have to face a lot of resistance, a lot of obstacles. Verse 5, it says, there shall not any man be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with you. I will not fail you nor forsake you. Be strong, verse 6 says, and of good courage. For unto this people shall you divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give to them. Be strong and courageous. Be brave. Be bold. Stand up for God. Fight for the truth. Fight for your inheritance. Verse 7 again, it says, only be you strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper whithersoever you go. Be strong, be courageous, and don't veer away from the law. This is how you really build up your strength, your spiritual strength and courage, to say what's right. To say there's one law, there's one supreme law, and it applies to everyone equally. No matter the race. And if there's an injustice, if there is something that's racially motivated, and a tragedy that comes from that, it should be dealt with individually. But here we are, in the name of justice, calling for so much injustice, calling for the removal of law enforcement. What happens if there's no one there to enforce the law? That's the last line of defense for so many of our communities. The police force, the law enforcement. Here, so many of these men and women are courageously going into dangerous neighborhoods to try to preserve some semblance of peace and order. You take them out of the area and you get Chaz. You get 6 blocks of downtown Seattle governed by the mob. Mob rule. Joshua 23 and verse 6. This is toward the end of the book. It says, "Be you therefore very courageous to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, that you turn not aside therefrom to the right hand or to the left." It takes courage to obey God's laws. It takes courage. I read that verse last week, Isaiah 59:15, where it says, if you are righteous, you make yourself a prey. If you're righteous, you come under attack. You stand up for the country, you come under attack. You make sacrifices for your country. You fight for the flag. You fight for those monuments. And you come under attack. Joshua 10 and verse 25, it says, Joshua said to them, "Fear not, nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for thus shall the Eternal do to all your enemies against whom you fight." Don't fear. Don't worry. Don't be afraid. That's what God told Joshua, and then Joshua told the people. We've got to be courageous. I suppose he probably said things similar to what Moses did. If you are afraid, if you are faint-hearted, then stay inside. Put yourself under lockdown. Put yourself under house arrest. Because cowardice spreads. It spreads like a virus. Joshua 11, verse 15, it says, "And the Eternal commanded Moses, his servant." As the Eternal commanded Moses, his servant, so did Moses command Joshua. And so did Joshua. He left nothing undone of all that the Eternal commanded Moses. So Joshua took all that land, the hills and all the south country and all the land of Goshen and the valley and the plain and the mountain of Israel and the valley of the same, even from the mount. Well, he did everything that God told him to do. It was a long, hard struggle, just like it's been for our nations. If you look back into the history. But we can't talk about military veterans from Vietnam or from the Korean War or from World War II. Just erase that history. We're erasing God out of our history. We want to erase the history, period. And then some of these old men that come forward who are just angered by seeing their cities destroyed, their monuments defaced. Like you have the Taliban or the Islamic State running through London. Or Seattle, or Minneapolis, or Virginia, or Massachusetts, throwing these statues into the ocean, into the harbor. An explosion's coming. There are two sides. You can pretty well see it in a Black Lives Matter demonstration and in a Donald Trump rally. And there are some violent elements on both sides. And that will spread. You're seeing people like never before purchasing guns in the United States, ammunition. And then you read those sobering prophecies, Ezekiel 4, Ezekiel 5, Isaiah 1. We have to be ready. We have to be strong and very, very courageous. Verse 19 of Joshua 11, it says, There was not a city that made peace with the children of Israel, save the Hivites and the inhabitants of Gibeah. All other they took in battle. Just a couple of exceptions. For the most part, they had to fight their way into the promised land. And in the spiritual sense, In the spiritual sense, this is what God says we must do if we're going to make it into the promised land, if we're going to make it into God's kingdom. We have to courageously take a stand for God. Like I said last week, that inspiring passage in Ephesians 6, we've got to be able to do everything we can to stand, not surrender. That veteran, what did he say? The only thing we kneel for are the fallen, the slain soldiers. That's an older gentleman who served his country, who's very disturbed by what's happening, calling out the mayor, calling out the leadership. You rarely hear it. It's just some old veteran showing up in London, speaking a little bit of truth. How rare that is. And how easy it is to just get swept along into the spirit of self-loathing, to join on with the movement. Even if they say, look, our intention here, it's, you know, we're a queer-affirming network and we're here to destroy the traditional family and we want to build up a sort of a communal society, a collectivist society, a communist society. And Americans are just supposed to treat it with reverence? The British are supposed to treat it reverentially? Verse 23, it says, so Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Eternal said unto Moses. And Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel according to their divisions by their tribes. And the land rested from war. The land rested. It took a lot of courageous and bold action on the part of Joshua and the Israelites. Look at World War II. Look at Winston Churchill. This famous, iconic statue right near Parliament, right near Westminster Abbey. And it's defaced last weekend. And here, Churchill was like he was the definition of courage in so many ways. And to see that statue boarded up, how symbolic is that? There was a cartoon in the Telegraph of the statue. I think there were four images. The statue was in each frame. It was being boarded up a little bit higher. And then you had the caption above Churchill, one of his famous quotes about never surrendering. I will never, 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 never surrender. And then the top of the statue is boarded up entirely. Surrendering to the mob. Surrendering to lawlessness. Coming back to Joshua here, this is from Malachi's message. My father said, it appears that Joshua of Moses' time had one outstanding strength, spiritual courage. God was instructing him to use this quality, showing him how much he would need it. It says in the Laodicean churches, these are the lukewarm churches prophesied in Revelation 3, spiritual courage may be the greatest need. Without it, the other virtues are of little value. He writes, God's people can't cower in fear and still grow in God's love. We can't grow in God's love. We can't grow in the grace and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ if we're cowering in fear. Love is action. Love is outflowing. Love is going forward. Love is standing for God and for the truth. It takes courage to grow in godly love. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can email the program, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.